Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to another Happy Pod, the only podcast that you are currently listening to. My name is Nathan. As always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host. His name is Lawrence Thomas Heisey. He is going to tell us what this silly little show is all about because no one cares about him or his life.
Didn't even get a chance this week. Fine. Fine. Nathan, this is the show where each week we get together to discuss something in the realm of pop culture. It could be a movie, it could be a telly show, it could be a video game. But the main thing is that we do so without any of the toxic discourse that is oh so prevalent these days. How the devil are you, good sir?
Lawrence, I'd like to thank you, first of all, for taking time out of your anniversary to spend with me and record this. Your wife is very angry. She's in the corner. She's very pissed off at both of us because we just need to podcast, okay? We took time out. We watched a movie, and now we're here to discuss that. So thank you. And happy anniversary to us.
Yes, exactly.
It's the day that I was your best man and you were my groom, and we had a lovely time a year ago today.
You do. So, just for clarity's sake, you do know it was yesterday in real
Lawrence!
Life.
Okay. Don't break the magic.
Okay, okay? I just wanted you to be aware.
Of course I knew.
Okay.
I was doing a funny little bit,
I Lawrence. Liked it. I liked it. It was a good bit. I was just clarifying that my wife has been stood in the corner for a week waiting for us. So,
oh, no.
I was adding to the bit, if anything.
Well, no, you ruined the bit, if
anything. I apologize. I've taken time away. I've watched a movie. We're going to talk about the movie. But before we do that...
You've already seen this movie. You hate this movie. You haven't shut up about it for 7 weeks, Lawrence.
Don't show my hand. Saying that, I am extremely nervous. I feel like this could either be our biggest argument or our biggest come-together moment of the year. So I'm nervous to hear what you think about it.
Good song, Come Together, the Beatles.
Stop it. Stop teasing me, Nathan.
Come together...
Right now,
over me. And speaking of come, I don't even. I
you,
have nothing.
What you there. Love, Nathan, is when a listener suggests an episode.
That is what I love. Thank you. I absolutely do love that. And this is. I mean, it was already on the schedule anyway. So
shush.
But I mean, if a listener has suggested it, we will of course give them credit. And this one actually comes from our good friend P.S. Moore from London, who suggested that we do Saltburn, and in the section where they are able to provide a brief summary of why it should be covered, Pierce says, it's fucking batshit. And that's all they said, so thank you very much, Pierce. So yeah, there we go.
It's certainly something. Do I want to ask you?
Do you want to ask me what?
How you feel about it? I feel like I'm going to have to at some point.
I mean, you'll have to at some point.
No, not yeah. unless I just talk over you the entire episode.
I mean, you could. You do it most podcasts we do. but thank you, Pierce. Yes, here we are. We're discussing Saltburn. Now, Lauren, so you've hated this movie. I hadn't seen it until earlier today, all right?
No.
But you saw it, like, when it first came out or whatever, and when all the hype was around it,
yeah.
and then you got cross and angry at everyone. Because you're a big film bro.
No. It sat
because
with me for a
Because only you
bit.
Understand cinema.
Fuck's sake, Nathan. It sat with me for a little while, and I was, like, unsure on where I sat with it. But the more I've thought about it, and, like, seen about it, and just... Because it's been really prevalent. Like, it's not left the space. You can't go on TikTok without hearing Murder on the Dance Floor, right? Like, it's everywhere.
It's a popular song.
It is a but it became more popular again. who's the artist? Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Yeah, she changed the title of the music video to "As Featured on Saltburn" on YouTube.
I'm fair enough for it.
Oh, get the bag. I'm absolutely fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah, get that bread.
Mm. But no, I'm not a massive fan of this. I can go into reasons as to why. Because I'm happy that people have, like, flocked in masses to see something a bit different. That's cool. And and like, anytime that happens, it does encourage a studio to put more marketing money into something different, you know, pushes the boat out a little bit. But I just, like, it's just not that good for me. Like, I think this is, all the times you tell me I like pretentious stuff that I don't actually think is pretentious, this movie to me is the definition of pretentious. Like, it says, on the surface, it appears to be about so many things, but it's so surface level. And I don't know, I feel like it's a film that wants to shock people. It wants to, like, be iconic and, like, have all these big moments in it. And you know the moments I'm talking about if you've seen it. Like, and it goes for, like, a younger target audience that are gonna, like, make this a big thing and make it a big event, which they did. And I think it also seemingly along the line makes some comments about, it has some commentary on classism and certain aspects of it that is just a bit like, don't know. But it's an Eat the Rich movie where there's sympathy to be had for the rich, which doesn't sit well.
I don't know if there is.
Oh no.
I think it very clearly pokes fun at the rich for a lot of this movie.
There's definitely, yeah, it's satire, but, like, at the end of it, there's a certain question about, like, whether two actions of two factions were equal. Oliver and the family were, like, who was in the right, who was in the wrong. And I think it'd be more interesting if it was ambiguous to, like, or if we saw the family do more terrible things, because Oliver's bad deeds far outweigh the family's bad deeds of what we're shown on the screen. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
All right, give me your thoughts. I don't want to, because I really don't, genuinely. I hate just ragging on shit. So I do have positives about the movie as well.
I don't mind it.
Yeah?
I think it's pretty okay. It's not my favourite movie ever.
No, yeah.
But, like, I was watching this and I knew you hated it. But
okay.
I was like, I think it's fine. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong or bad about it. Mm. It's in 4:3.
Okay, yeah. Are we doing this early, are we?
For no reason.
I see, that's one of my positives about it. God, we don't agree on anything.
God,
do we?
You're such a prick, right? Why is that a positive?
Because and this is in the big 4:3 rant we had, so I won't go over it too much, but, like, it does, it uses it for the purpose that 4:3 is still used for, right? Like, it does close-ups on faces very well, it captures Saltburn very well in terms of it being a big building. It has a really nice thing, kind of, it helps with the on-screen pairing, but also there's nice kind of themes and messages being mixed in with height differences and who's got the power in certain dynamics, because, like, Barry Keoghan is, like, 5'5", and Jacob Elordi is, like, 6'7", or something ridiculous. So, like, it's funny when they're on screen together and there's just room for an entire person between them.
Is it Barry Keoghan?
Yeah, he's the main one. He plays Oliver in this one.
No, I know, but is it pronounced Keoghan? I thought it was Keegan.
No, I used to think that, but I've seen him in a few interviews where he says Keoghan himself, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But I think the actual Irish pronunciation is probably something way different, but he doesn't use that in interviews and stuff.
Fair enough. Well, he knows his own name, so...
I mean, you've got to trust him to do that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, fair enough. No, I don't like the 4-3. I don't think it's necessary. It's just
fair enough.
That's just one of those things that whenever I watch a movie and it's in 4x3, I'm just like, okay, well, yeah, that is a bit pretentious, isn't it? It's just so unnecessary. And you say, like, it's good for close-ups and, like, fucking close-ups on faces. And, like, there's no reason why you can't do that in 16x9 or 2-3 or whatever the fuck. Like, it's... You can. You can do it.
I do see your point, because, yeah, it's been done. It's not like any movie with a close-up in it that isn't in this format is awful. But, like, it definitely is a choice. And Linus Sangren, who shot the movie, he's shot, like, a load of other things that mostly are in 2-3-9. I think that's it. Like, it's... He did La La Land, he did Don't Look Up. That I didn't see that movie, but you did, right? You liked it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And I just like, he's a very good cinematographer. I think, like, you know, aspect ratio aside, we'll disagree on that, but like the imagery in the movie is quite nice to look at.
It looks good.
Yeah.
It's a good looking movie. It looks great. I don't think there's any part of it where I'm like, this looks like shit, because it doesn't. It's very well shot. It does look great throughout the entire movie. I think it uses lighting very well.
Lighting's a big really part does, of this. Yeah.
It's the atmosphere is always set perfectly. I think it always manages to strike the look and the tone of it. Always seem to do a great job of matching up. It's shot very well. It's just I know if you're gonna do it in 4:3, fucking do it in vertical. Where do you draw the line, man? Pisses me off.
they've very clearly by definition drawn two lines where they want them.
But why? I don't get why. Like, we agreed movies are shot this way because this is what movies are.
No, your mind agreed this. No one else has thought this.
I mean, most people, considering the fact that you go to the cinema and this is how the screens are formatted in terms of size, okay?
It's the most popular, I will say, obviously.
Yes, because it's the most cinematic. The clue is right.
I knew you were going to say this, so I wanted to ask you: what does that mean? What is cinematic?
It feels cinematic. It feels like I'm watching a movie. But it feels big and epic and good. Okay, it feels it's puts me in the right frame of mind.
Okay, but that's your frame of mind. That's how you digest movies.
Yeah, that's and most people.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Look.
But is it about, am I wrong? Because you go to the cinema and the screens are that size. If you go watch like a movie and it's in 16x9 at the cinema, it's not filling up the whole screen, is it?
Yeah, it's not. I take your point. I see what you mean. There are some times where like I've tried a few times to get into Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and the aspect ratio is like, it feels claustrophobic almost. But that's...
What's that showing?
4x3 for like the first season or so. Because it was like proper early. And it's like on a camcorder. It looks like arse for the first season. It wasn't shot with 4x3 in mind. That was just the time period that the movie, the TV show was shot in. And obviously, like four guys and a camcorder are not like award-winning cinematographers.
So yeah, if it's a TV show and it's of the era, then yeah, that's how it should look. It should look 4:3.
Oh yeah, because they're like, framed with that in intention.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like The Simpsons, like the seasons 1 to 10 of The Simpsons should always be 4:3. If they're in 16x9, you're doing something wrong. Okay,
but then this is obviously shot in 4x3.
Made in 2023, Lawrence. I'm in an era where we've decided that movies don't look like this.
Look, we'll move on from this because we'll be doing it all day. But the last thing I'll say is you decided. But cinematographers shoot in any aspect ratio they want. The creator wasn't in 2:3:9. That was a skinnier boy. You didn't moan about one.
Yeah, because it's at least fucking more cinematic. Like, what if it's skinnier? Fine, whatever. I don't care. But not fucking 4x3. Right,
but then I ask you the same question. Oh, I could get to the point where it's just a straight line. Where do you draw the line, Nathan? How could it be one? How could it go in one direction but not the other?
That's just pedantic, isn't it?
I think you're being pedantic about the 4x3.
I am, and I will be pedantic about this movie as well. I have a lot of questions about when this is set, because... makes no sense to me.
There are some certain things that don't add up. Yeah.
There's a lot. The whole thing doesn't add up. It's a fucking mystery box of when exactly it is.
All right, before we get into any of that, so obviously you said it yourself, you know that there's been this massive like buzz around the movie.
Yeah.
Where did you hear about it?
Where?
Yeah, because normally when I bring up a movie that isn't like a massive thing or like a thing that people are talking about, like you normally have either... heard of it and not been interested in it or go, what the fuck is that?
I think it was actually my sister who told me about it, first of all.
Yeah.
My younger sister, because she's like 18 and like, you know, she's very Gen Z and loves like these kind of up and coming movies and stuff. I think she's a big fan of Jacob Elordi as well.
Who is it?
I'd never heard of him.
Really?
Like, suddenly the whole fucking world's talking about this cunt. And I'm like, who's this guy? And then I watch this movie and I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see why. He's most known for, I think his breakout role was in Euphoria. Actually, it was The Kissing Booth on Netflix.
And I'm watching The Kissing Booth every day.
I've seen him. I've seen all three of them.
Okay, great. Well, I haven't seen any of them.
He was one of the main leads in Euphoria. That's where he's like most
known. Never watched Euphoria.
Fair enough. You'd be never like... heard of it or seen it?
I'd heard of Euphoria.
Yeah.
But everything I heard about Euphoria made me not want to watch it because it was like, oh, look at all these fucking 16-year-olds in 10th grade and they're like doing meth and all shagging each other and everything. And I'm like,
it's like if Skins was on LSD. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's US Skins, but not the US Skins, which was horrible.
Oh, God. Did they make a US Skins?
Well, they tried to.
as they did with everything.
Yeah. Very quickly got cancelled.
Fair enough. All right. So your sister told you about it.
Yeah. So my sister told me about it. And then I was like, okay. But I never planned to watch it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everyone was talking about it. And then it just kind of got annoying because everyone was just like, oh, this is amazing. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, I don't care.
Imagine being on the outside of that and being bitter about it. Like, I watched it, didn't like it, and everyone's like, it's the best movie in the world. And I'm like, no, it's not.
It's not the best movie in the world, but it's not the worst movie in the world like you think it is either.
I don't think it's the worst movie in the world. I just think it's a big, like, for people to be losing their minds about it to this degree, I'm like, oh man, I saw like so many better movies than this last year.
All right, yeah, but you're a weird cunt who watches a movie every single day, all right? You have to understand.
Never missed, Lawrence. Not once.
You will, trust me. And I've been waiting.
No, all right? you're practically counting down the days.
I'm checking your letterbox every single night. I've already noticed you stopped tweeting them. But
I deleted the thread. It got annoying to post them too many places, yeah.
It got annoying to everyone, trust me. yeah, you have to understand that the average person does not watch a movie a day, Lawrence. To the average person, frankly, that's fucking insane, all right? Okay? So, yes, you may know and may understand that there are so many better movies, okay?
Yeah.
But then, like, I see, like, fucking people... I think this is just me complaining about film Twitter again, but like,
oh no, like strap someone, in everyone.
Like fucking people were, it could not compute these absolute fuckheads that people only watch a certain amount of movies in a year.
Yeah.
Like someone maybe posted like, oh, maybe like the, I don't know, the 13, 14 best movies or just the 13, 14 movies they saw this year. Mm. And then all the film Twitter was like 13 movies. Oh my fucking God. That is as if it's the most batshit insane thing. I'm like, yeah, but you're obsessed with this shit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You live and breathe this shit. Normal people don't, okay? Like,
no.
If you're really into books, you read, you're not reading fucking 100 books a year.
No, yeah, no, I'm not, yeah.
Exactly. It's just... people have different interests, and that's okay.
Nathan, I never said this.
I know you didn't.
Leave me alone.
But it's you and all your friends.
You're doing that thing again where you saw something on Twitter, and then you just went, Lawrence said this, and believes this. He has no idea that I've seen this or that this tweet exists, but he must be in on this.
Is that... what's that meme that, from the Eric Andre show where he shoots the guy? And
this is your fault.
How could Lawrence have done this? That's me when I see a film Twitter tweet.
It's true.
It's a little true, I guess. It's because you're my representation of film Twitter. You're the only like actual representation of it I have.
But I've said this so many times, film Twitter would laugh at me. Like, I'm not watching old movies from the 40s and stuff. I find a lot of them unwatchable. Like,
they practically are.
No, I'm not. I'm not, because I haven't.
How long until you watch 12 Angry Men?
I'll be honest, it's been on my mind.
There you go.
I have to hold my hands up to that one. He's got me. I've been found.
Get him, boys.
Get him. All right, so, yeah. All right, so you've seen it. The hype is massive, but you're saying it's like, this doesn't really bother you one way or the other.
I think it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's a good way to spend a couple of hours, I think.
It's never entertaining.
Yeah. At no point was I like, I would rather have spent my time doing something else.
Yeah.
Okay. I was glad I watched it. Certain moments I was quite glad. but overall, I think it's a
Jacob Elordi's wanking.
It's a net positive of a movie, I think.
Okay.
Doesn't do any harm.
I think it says some stuff, but again,
I don't think it does. I don't necessarily think it does. And you know me, I'm a big class warfare kind of guy. Like, I hate the rich.
I think it's careful, and it's like, it's not like Oliver very easily could be like a really poor guy, and it would be infinitely more offensive.
What's going on with Barry Keoghan? He somehow looks 16 and 48 at the same time.
Yeah, he's got like, he's like a bit wrinkly, isn't he? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, look at this little boy. Well, that's a fully grown man. But it also might be a little boy.
Yeah, okay? I think that's part and parcel with him just being a small guy as well. He's a short king.
Yeah, maybe. He is a short guy, yeah. Which is great. There's nothing wrong with that.
And then you somehow believe that, like, Jacob Elordi is, like, 17 and at uni or something as well. And you're like, man, this man is as tall as a tree.
He's very tall. He is, like... Like, I get it. He's a very beautiful man.
He is
like,
incredibly handsome, yeah.
He is incredibly handsome. He's Australian, though, I believe.
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's very...
He's got a good accent.
His accent work in pretty much everything he does is great. He did... Elvis in Priscilla.
I haven't seen it.
It's a good movie, and it's very funny that, like, Austin Butler is... You know Austin Butler's Elvis press tour. Mm. He's like, physically, we'll never stop saying Elvis. I'm Elvis. I can't have my voice not do Elvis. And Jacob Elordi is just like, yeah, I showed up. I didn't really work on the accent, and I just did it. And like Sofia Coppola was like, yeah, it's good, cool. I've never met a man that's more like, it's my job. I like it, but it's fine.
All right, this might be a stupid question. All right,
okay.
And maybe I am getting them mixed up. But is Sofia Coppola the woman with the legs from Kingsman?
It's not the same woman, but what is her name?
Isn't it? I thought it was Sofia. I thought that was Sofia Coppola.
I'm finding out the cast. Sofia Boutella.
Oh, Sofia Boutella. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
There you go. So, Sofia.
Sense. Sofia.
I would say that you are 50% correct.
Boutella and Coppola aren't that different. There's a la at the end.
There is a la. But they are very different women. So.
I mean, yeah. Maybe. I don't know them personally. So.
But yeah. No, right, look, all right, I want to do positives because I don't want to front load this with just me screaming at stuff.
All right, great.
We've already spoke about Barry Keoghan and Jacob Elordi a little bit, but I think my two favourite things about this is how it looks and how it's acted. Like, pretty much every performance in this is note perfect for what they're trying to do.
Anytime you put Richard E. Grant in something, I'm loving it.
It's always right? good.
What a delight to watch that man is. Yeah. He's so good in anything. Like, he could be doing the most stupid, batshit sane thing like you've ever cast him in, and he will put 110% of his dick into it, all yeah. right? He's that fucking good, mate. He just fully commits, and he has such a good time. He's a great man. I love him so much.
He is. There's a moment in this, one of my favourite moments in this whole thing, is Richard E. Grant. It's after Farley's been, like, kicked out in the middle of the night because he's been framed for stealing something or whatever. And Barry Keoghan goes, oh, what are we going to do when they bring it up? And Jacob Elordi goes, they won't. And then immediately Richard E. Grant comes out, doors bang open. What a glorious day!
Yeah.
He's, like, he's perfect as this, like, just neglecting the sour parts of life elitist snob.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Very good.
Yeah. Barry Keoghan's always great for a little weirdo freak, isn't he?
Barry Keoghan's another one who seemed to just like come out of nowhere. Like,
oh, do you reckon he's been around for a bit?
Yeah, I feel like I didn't know of him until like Eternals, and then suddenly I feel like after that he's been like everywhere, just almost immediately.
It definitely pushed him into a more popular circle, obviously, because it's a Marvel movie and it had eyes on it.
You would hate that, obviously.
No, I like Eternals. You know this.
No, but you know.
Shut up. We cut
in a
Nathan.
Conversation which is mostly cut.
It's entirely cut.
Oh, entirely.
We cut. Don't even get into Marvel.
Okay, great.
If you're missing context, last week me and Nathan screamed at each other for what we were then humbly realised was like 30 minutes longer than we thought it was, and it all got removed from the edit because we went, it's a bad look on both of us, really, isn't it? All right, Barry Keoghan, he did like, have you ever seen Killing of a Sacred Deer or heard of it?
Come on.
No, but it was a big movie back in the day.
Was it?
Yeah. Had a massive eerie trailer. It practically started the A24 creepy trailer thing where they play like a pop song, but a bit slower and creepier.
They've been doing that for years.
So this was the one that like a lot of people paid attention to.
When did it come out?
I want to say 2014.
Maybe.
Barry Keoghan's in Dunkirk as well. He's the little boy that falls on his head and blinds himself.
Oh, yes, he is. Mm-hmm. Yes. Of course.
He's also the Joker.
I know he's the Joker, Lawrence.
That's what I'm saying, man. You want a freak, you get Barry Keoghan. He's good at it.
But he's also the Joker no one cares about.
Yeah, well, he's the Joker that I don't think was quite given a fair run just yet.
But he's the Joker that shouldn't be given a fair run.
Yeah, he's the Joker that does not need to be in the movie.
He's the Joker that everyone thinks shouldn't exist. Which is quite an achievement when you live in a world with Jared Leto as the Joker as well.
That's very true. Yeah. Oh, God. Who else have we got in this? We've got Jacob Elordi is brilliant. Like we said, his accent, flawless. Great. Like, we're two British guys, right? Mm. And that's just the way, cheers, Ollie! Like, it's such a little silly voice that he's putting on.
Yeah.
Do you know the guy that plays Farley?
Not personally.
He went to my school. He was in the year below me at school.
Is he not American?
No.
Oh,
he's also in Gran Turismo. He's the guy that goes, I know this track, I've raced it 1,000 times.
As we know, I am Gran Turismo's biggest fan and watch it all the time.
I've never seen it either. It became a big meme. The I've raced this track 1,000 times or something.
Maybe in your circle, right? Not in mine. So my Twitter's mostly Doctor Who and, unfortunately at the moment, genocide. But you know,
that's where you want your Twitter, right? The sweet spot, Doctor Who and genocide.
That's just the times we live in, unfortunately. It isn't pleasant, but that's what it is.
It's not. Kerry Mulligan shows up. She's fun. For very briefly.
Oh, is she that woman who's like, I'm here and now I'm dead or whatever?
Yeah, she's like, I'm here, I'm dead. And then Rosamund Pike's like, don't worry about that. She'd do anything for attention.
That was quite funny. Rosamund Pike is great in this.
She's very, very good in this, yeah.
Always a good bit of fun.
Probably my favourite performance like in the movie. Because it's understated, but every line she has is just... It just makes you go, oh my God, like, these people
She's
do
very
suck.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, 100%. She's very fun. I like her.
Alice Oliver, I think her name is. I wrote it down somewhere. Let me find it. I don't want to say the wrong name.
Is that Venetia?
Venetia, yeah.
The most fucking Tory name you could ever fucking hear.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Rah, where's my backy energy?
Right, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, Alison Oliver is her name. She's...
Alison Oliver. Who's she? What's she been in?
I've no idea. I've never seen her in anything before.
Debut?
Maybe. Mostly TV stuff as well. So yeah, I'd say this is probably her most popular thing that she's done. No, she's good. It's a good performance. She's very, like, that kind of monologue she has while she sat in the bath and, like, staring straight into Barry Keoghan's face and, like, wiping water all over him. She's very good. Very, very good performer.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Very good.
But I quite like them quite a lot.
I saw a tweet earlier that said basically the moral of this movie is that bisexuals are toxic. that's quite funny.
I laugh because I don't know what to say. I don't know what's safe.
Nothing you say.
Nathan's staring me down the camera. He's threatening me with a gun. He's prompting me to say something horrendous.
Let's do a timeline thing first of all.
Okay, please.
I want to get into this. I want to be pedantic for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. So right at the beginning, we see this cunt is at fucking Oxford or Cambridge or one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know which one. They're both the same.
Yeah.
And it seems to imply that he's just got there and they're all just starting at the same time. Okay.
Yeah.
And it says, like, welcome to class of 2006. So to me, that says, oh, this is 2003 then. Because we were class of 2018 and we started in 2015, okay?
You make a good point, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what that says to me. I'm like, all right, this is 2003. It goes over into the next year, so, and it's in the summer, so it should be the summer of 2004 is when the majority of this movie is set. But that does not seem to be the case at all, because this movie seems to think it's 2007 for some reason, because, like, somehow, and maybe they finished uni and graduated, all right? Mm. Maybe all that stuff at uni took place over 3 years. Did not get that vibe at all.
Yeah, it's very quick, because they need to get to Saltburn, yeah.
Yeah, But maybe it took place over 3 years. I don't think it did, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that.
Yeah.
But then it should still be summer 2006 and not summer 2007. Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows came out 2007.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
All right?
Was Superbad in it as well?
Superbad. Yeah. Superbad, September 2007. All right? So even if it was summer of 2007, it still wasn't out. Let enough out for them to be watching it on their fucking TV.
All right? My man's Edna Moden all over it. December 15th.
Florida, fucking surely got low apple bottom jeans.
Yep.
October 2007.
Side point, I saw this recently. Did you ever consider that it was not the boots that had the fur, and it was boots paired with a fur piece on top?
No.
Yeah, I see. I always thought it was boots with the fur, as in like
Ugg boots.
Yeah. See, right. My wife said this, and I've always considered it to be like boots with like a fur shawl on. That's how I've always thought about it.
No, you're a fucking idiot.
But that's what it is. Yeah. I'm right.
No,
it's not about Ugg boots.
No, I think you're wrong. I think you're because Ugg boots are like very big at the time, so that makes sense.
I have to find this out. Boots with.
I remember when that song came out. Literally, the only thing the girls wore were those Ugg boots.
I do remember.
And also, what? That makes no sense. Just from a fucking like. Why would you say boots with the fur? The fur being there. Why are your boots being paired with the jacket?
She was wearing, because
apple bottom jeans, boots with the fur.
Yeah, but also the Reeboks with the straps. What different shoe each foot?
And then apple bottom jeans,
boots with the fur.
My whole club were looking at her.
Hey,
where did the Reeboks with the straps come in?
Baggy sweatpants and the Reeboks with the straps.
But then apple bottom jeans.
Could be different women.
Baggies. Yeah, it could be different women. And apple bottom jeans, boots with a fur. Is baggy sweatpants and Reeboks with the straps, is that him?
Maybe. Could be. No, because she turns around and gives that big booty a slap.
No, wait, but surely had them apple bottom jeans, boots with the fur. The whole club was looking at her.
Ah.
She hit the flow.
Confirmation from T-Pain, who is a feature on the song.
There we go.
Listen, this is a direct quote from T-Pain, right? No one come for me. The first girl is dressed how Flo Rida likes. Second girl is dressed how I like. So Flo Rida, we can infer from this, likes... The boots
apple
with the fur,
jeans,
yeah.
And boots with the fur.
And then he says, Flo likes a classy lady. I like a lazy bitch.
Okay.
So she's in baggy sweatpants and the Reeboks with the straps.
All right, well, there we are.
All right, well, at least we've solved this.
That was important.
Right, anyway, more timeline stuff. Go on.
But anyway, yeah. So then the movie, like, I can go with it being summer 2006. Again, I don't think it should be.
It's still wrong if it's 2006.
Yeah, either they don't know what class of 2006 means, or they somehow got the fucking timeline wrong. I mean, probably both, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. And then if it's summer 2007, that's just not right at all. But then also, like, and then at the end, I'm like, is it 2020 now? Because we're at a cafe and everyone's wearing masks? Is it, like,
well,
COVID?
He is older, so it is supposed to be...
I knew it was supposed to, but I'm like, 14 years older?
Yeah.
Like,
they're giving Barry Keoghan a comb over, and that's about it. Rosamund Pike still looks 30.
Not aged a day. Like, fucking hell. Not a day of age on her face
and also,
whatsoever.
I like, look, we've already said this, I like Richard E. Grant. What's going on with that age gap?
Is it that big of an age? Well, yeah.
I mean, maybe Rosamund Pike's just very elegant for her age.
Rosamund Pike, like, no disrespect to her, but she's not a young Gen Z lady, is she? Okay.
you're trying so hard not to call her old. She's 45 years old.
Okay, but I'm...
Not young, not old.
But also rich people, you know?
Ah,
they've all got child brides or whatever.
Right? It might be her money. We don't know where... Saltburn's old money.
No.
They've
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it can't be her old money.
And there's the joke about all the Henrys as well, implying
that's
that,
true.
Like, he's related to Henry VIII somehow.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, the movie.
Oh, the movie. Yeah, so, I don't know. The movie doesn't know when it's set. Or if it does, it just does a bad job of figuring out. This is so stupid, though. Like, it's so easy to get this stuff right, and this is why it annoys me so much.
Yeah.
It's like one simple Google search and you can figure out when the fuck Harry Potter came out, man. It's really not that difficult, you know?
It's one of like the most well-documented film series of all time.
I know. Oh,
yeah. God. No, I do know what you're saying. I wish that was where my nitpicks ended. Genuinely do.
Okay.
All right, look. To set this up.
Yes.
Have you seen Promising Young Woman? Emerald Fennell's first movie.
No.
I have. I watched it this week to make sure I wasn't. I watched Saltburn, obviously, about 2 months ago or so. I watched it for the first time.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I didn't like that. And then I was like, right, it's finally time to watch Promising Young Woman, because I've been meaning to get to it for ages. And I was like, and I really didn't like Saltburn. I really hope Promising Young Woman is a better body of work.
Mm.
And I watched
it. Is
it? It's... And again, right, I'm going to be cautious because I'm a man and it's not really my place to critique Promising Young Woman.
What is it?
It's, you know the film, what it's about.
No.
We've spoken about it before, I'm sure we have.
Have we?
Yeah, it's Carey Mulligan goes around basically pretending to be drunk, and when obviously, inevitably, men take advantage of her, take her back, she... scares the shit out of them, basically. Like, I wasn't drunk the whole time. I've caught you. You're a predator. This kind of stuff. And then the idea is that it escalates a bit further than telling off blokes.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of this, but okay.
You've definitely heard of the movie, because we've spoken about it before.
Okay.
Towards the end, like, the actions taken by the main character in this, like, I hate this phrase, but, like, quote-unquote, a girl bossy way. It very much is, like, this look at... nothing will stop Carey Mulligan's character from getting what she wants.
Mm.
But then, like, in that trail and being as cool and kind of as one-liner as that character is, the film has that character do things to women that are, like, inexcusable. Like, some of these women are, like, enablers of men, and so they are villainous characters, but there's, like, gaslighting into thinking that other women were raped, and it's, like, it's not... It, all in all, it left me, like, it's well-intentioned and its heart's in the right place, but it I think accidentally said some stuff that made me go, that's more gross than anything. Like, it doesn't feel progressive. It feels like that was a step backwards.
Mm.
And it was quite disappointing. But I wanted to watch it to give Emerald Fennell, like, her credit. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was really hoping to have my mind changed. But I think Saltburn is kind of guilty of the same things. I think it's well-intentioned. It is obviously jumping on the Eat the Rich bandwagon, which is a bandwagon I don't tire of. It's very nice to see, like, the menu Glass Onion, where rich people are just painted for the idiots that they often are. And I like a lot of that stuff. But I just think that, like, it sets its sights on the wrong target, revealing Oliver as this, like, supervillain with a flashback that, like, was I supposed to believe it wasn't Oliver all along? It was very, it was me reveal. But, like, I knew. I don't know, this visceral hatred that Oliver has for, like, being from the middle class, it feels very, and I can go into this more, but, like, it feels very fear-mongery of, like, look out for that lower class coming to take what we have.
But you just said it yourself there, though. You described him as middle class.
Yeah.
Because he's not lower, he's not working class.
No, not at all.
He, a big twist of the movie is, like, for the first, for most of it, he makes it out like he's from, like, a very... very poor backgrounds, and his family has lots of issues with drugs and all this sort of stuff, which is just complete bullshit. Turns out not to be the case at all. He's got a very seemingly nice, loving family who are very, you know, doing all right for themselves. They've got quite a lot.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Large house and in a very nice estate and all this kind of stuff. There, in no way is Oliver a working class,
no,
you know, fucking down on his luck poor boy at all. Yeah, he's not as fucking rich as fucking these cunts, I grant you. Yeah. But
he's not even. He's not even. Right. He's doing all right. But then there's rich, and then there's Saltburn rich. There's like new money. This is old money. The manor house and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, carry on. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a, oh, look, the poor are coming for us kind of thing. I think it's a, I think the movie's like even like fucking, like, not even like fucking, I don't know. <It's>, I just think like, because if Oliver was poor, if Oliver was actually poor, then I could see what you're saying, but he's not.
And that's, so. And, but that's why I think it's like, there's an element of it that, like, it's such a fucking strange movie, because if Oliver was poor, as he said he was, like the child of like an addictive set of parents who like abuse him and each other, and then he ends up like spending time at Saltburn and then growing to hate how kind of what's the word, how kind of like fickle they are with their connections and friends, and he ended up taking that power for himself and essentially dismantling a family that abused their power. I could get behind that, but it's more like this guy who has stuff he wants, like he's not wanting for anything. He's an incredibly smart guy at Oxford with a family who are like absurdly nice to the point of silliness when they go to that house. It's very like, we haven't heard from you in 6 months, but we're so proud of you, son, darling boy. Like, I understand the film isn't intentionally trying to make a fuck the poor point, and I'm not saying Emerald Fennell is doing this consciously at all. But I think, like, I don't know, it's making a comment on this, like, old money will always have their cohorts, and, like, they will always be able to keep you at arm's length. And you're always, if you're in Saltburn, you're at the mercy of someone that's allowed you to be at Saltburn. And I understand that Oliver is trying to, kind of, he sees this and pivots his plan to take hold of their assets so that he'll be the one that has the say. He'll be the one that creates the rules at Saltburn. But at the end of it, we've seen so little stuff. The film jibes at the family the whole time, right? Like, ignoring the ugly parts in life, like we spoke about with Richard E. Grant, and like how fickle Rosamund Pike is with Kerry Mulligan's character. Like, she doesn't even give a shit that her friend has died. Like, the film jabs at them all the time. But there does come a point where it starts to feel a bit excessive. Like, after, like, the family start getting killed off, like, Felix dies, then Venetia dies, then it's just two grieving parents, and Oliver is still like, yeah, no one's willing to work harder than me, I want what I've got. And it's like, it comes to a point where, and this is what I said about the starting to feel sympathy, like, Oliver becomes a villain. And for a villain to be a villain, there has to be victims. And that, by proxy, makes me feel sympathy for the rich family in an Eat the Rich story. Do you see what I'm getting at?
I do, yeah. But I think the fact that it is Oliver doing those things, and like you say, you know, he's not wanting for anything, but yeah, he still somehow thinks he's owed all this kind of stuff. I think that's kind of the point.
Mm.
Like, he's not some poor little kid. He's not some poor, you know, downtrodden kid from a difficult background who has had to struggle. You know, at one point, like, the people he goes to uni with mention he's a, you know, a fucking scholarship boy. Is that even the case? Might not be.
He's got that money in his pocket, so.
Yeah, so doesn't necessarily seem like that is actually the case. So it's I think it's privilege. It's a point of privilege. It's someone who comes from privilege thinking, oh, they've got more privilege than me. I deserve that, actually. I deserve that privilege.
Okay, yeah, and that's an interesting perspective, to be fair.
That's kind of where I'm seeing it. I'm not seeing it as, like, Oliver, like, the movie having this kind of, like, message of fuck the rich, but also watch out for the poor, because they're pesky, you know? I don't necessarily think it's that point of view. I think it's privilege and how that is a fucking...
two different calibers of rich, by thinking they're owed more, kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's where kind of the movie comes out from. I mean, that's just my interpretation. That's my perspective.
No,
of
I,
it,
I can but... I can totally see your point. Like I said, this is kind of why I was interested to hear what you had to say, because I know you are like me, and you love an Eat the Rich, you love a satire, you love something that pokes jabs at kind of entitled pricks. So I was interested to get your thoughts on it. Like, do you see what I'm kind of saying about how at the ending of it, it's one action is not equal to the others. Like the whole movie, we've been told, oh, you're just Felix's newest toy. But like every scene with Felix, apart from maybe a few, he's just a chill guy. Like he's a snob, but he's a normal guy that doesn't really deserve to be murdered.
But I think that's kind of the point, though.
Okay.
Like, I don't think we're supposed to see Barry Keoghan as this hard-done-by person. The movie is telling us all throughout it, this cunt's weird, all right?
Yeah.
This is a sadistic person. We see several scenes where he's framed as, like, he has a thing about sadism and power and all this kind of stuff. In like every sexual encounter we see him with, he's always taking on the dominant role and he's making people like say they're going to be good for him and going to follow the rules and all this kind of stuff. He clearly enjoys the power that he can have over people in those situations. Okay. He's not it does initially frame him as like the victim and this sad little poor boy and stuff. But as the movie goes on, I think it we're told more and we're told that's not necessarily the case, all right? This cunt is like, he's got some stuff going on in his head, all right? He's got a strange ego and he's not necessarily the hero of the piece.
All right, well then, maybe it's a... Because this film does frustrate me in a way that like, I totally take your interpretation of it, and that's fine. Like, I guess because I've watched it twice now, I've seen it the same way both times, and I don't know. Like, there is an element of it that doesn't sit with me, and maybe I'm letting public perception of the movie creep into that a little bit. Like, it's very disheartening to see like the Oliver's ending dance becoming a TikTok trend, and it's like that's not the point. Like, this is not a good thing.
That's not the movie's fault, though, is it?
No, and I do get it, but I also think the movie does revel in a little bit of, like, you know, like murder on the dance floor, dancing naked in the mansion where you've just offed four members of the family, or three, I guess, members of the family, to claim it as your own. Like, it is a little bit like, I understand what you're saying about, like, that you're not supposed to look at it and be like, he's a winner, but the movie very much goes... He's a winner. He gets to dance and celebrate now.
Does he? Is that saying he's a winner, though? I mean, yeah, in the sense that he's won and he has this stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's saying, yes, this is good and we should all aspire to do this, though. Yeah, it's saying, yes, he's the winner, but it's also asking, is that good? I don't think it's as simple as he's the winner. Yay, everyone clap. All right, bye. You know, it's like he's the winner,
but I don't.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
I don't. That's the thing. I don't feel that sense of ambiguity coming from it. Like,
there's the whole sequence where, like, he's, you know, it's revealed he's been talking to Rosamund Pike. That's all very villainous.
Oh, and
then
and
we
I
get
agree,
the
yeah.
flash, and we get the flashbacks of like, you know, what he did all along and all this kind of shit, and like. That to me, it's very, you know, the kind of twist, which we also coming from a mile off, but the twist like you know, he's not the hero, he's actually the villain sort of thing.
And I completely agree. I know the film is painting him as the villain in the end of it, but like to show that like the ending, I think if it was going for something more like what you're describing, which is like he's won, but is this winning? Is this what you should aspire to do? Maybe there should be some shot type where you feel, look at this loser all alone in his big house with nothing. Like, maybe that, like, you could even get that effect by, like, showing us an outsider observer perspective. A lot of the film is about how people are perceived and looking. Like, there's a lot of shots of Barry looking through a window at someone. And also a lot of window stuff in the movie as well. Like, there would be something, and again, I'm not trying to rewrite it or anything, but just have the exact same ending, but... Maybe the music cuts away and we gain a wider angle perspective and just go like, look at this fucking loser. It never feels like Barry it never feels like the film condemns Barry. It feels like it wants us to condemn him a little bit, but it feels like the film wants to have its cake and still paint him as this guy that's come out on top, for better or for worse. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do, but I don't agree.
Okay.
I just don't agree. I think if we did have some kind of cut like that, I think it would be too on the nose and not necessarily trusting the audience enough, really. I think that, like, what you're saying can be gathered from the ending itself. Like, yeah, he's dancing naked through the house, but it's a big house, and at no point do we see anyone else there. He is there and there all alone, all right? We don't need to have some cut to an external shot to see that. We do see it. We see it in the sequence itself, you know? And yeah, he's got this big house, and I guess he's got the money, but now what else has he got? He's not got anyone to share it with.
No, but
he's got some. He's got some rocks.
I mean, he does have the rock. I did like the rock element. I will admit that was a cool touch.
Yeah.
What I'll say, and we won't go on too long about the ending, because we've obviously come at it from different perspectives, and that's more interesting, I think, than anything. But like, there is this kind of, I see what you're saying about it not trusting the audience, but then I think that's entirely, the film is, it's so clear intentioned, like it wants to be unambiguous, like the whole showing you the flashbacks of, like, it's everyone watching it for the first time knows. Felix has mysteriously showed up dead. Venetia's mysteriously showed up dead. The last person they spoke to was Barry Keoghan's character. I wonder who could have had a hand in this. Barry Keoghan uses it as a move to get Farley out of the house. I wonder if he was planning that as well. Like, it's, and then for a movie that, I, like you say from your perspective, wants to place distrust in the audience, it seems very untrusting that they'll get it when it's like showing quick succession shots of, I mixed in the drugs in the alcohol that I gave to Felix, and I secretly threw up. It's very,
yeah.
Sherlock explains it. Yeah,
I do think that is a bit heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying the movie does a perfect job all the way throughout of this stuff at all, because it doesn't. I just think that, like, to me, it would have felt like that. Like, if we did have the ending where it, like, we have some cut, and like, I don't know, it's the fucking vampire butler watching through the window or whatever, then like, that would have felt like another one of those cuts from earlier, where he's like, oh, he's fair piercing enough. A fucking hole in the bike. Like, yeah, we get it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't necessarily need this, like, painted by numbers for me.
So you're saying one is on the nose, but the other one kind of fixes it in that regard? Like, it doesn't.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Fair enough. No, that's completely fair enough.
And I'm saying you're a big dum-dum.
No!
Yeah.
I saw it in a different way. All right, do you want to talk about the silly little... I laughed at the supervillain reveal.
Here's what I want to talk about, all right?
Okay.
I mean, maybe this says more about me, but, like, I heard, like, a lot of people, like, because there was all, like, what I heard, I haven't heard much about this movie, but what I had heard was, like, oh, don't watch it with your parents in the room. I'm like... And I'd heard talk of the bathroom scene, all right?
Yeah.
And I very quickly figured out what that was when it happened, all right? And I was like, it's just a bit of cum, mate. Like, I've seen... there is so much worse thing than a man just drinking a bit of cum.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Like, it's really not that intense. And sure, he fucks a grave, all right? But, like, still...
It's intended to be this clutch your pearls viral... weird thing, isn't it? But
it's not, though. It's like I've not, seen so much worse stuff than this. And again, maybe that just says more about me. But like,
no, I don't think so.
It's really not as like shocking and gasping as people have made out to be.
It strikes me as a lot of the time people have seen something like this is, you know, the all sex scenes are bad fucking weirdos that keep moaning about like the necessity of sex scenes. And it's like, well, some people in real life have sex. Like, believe it or not, it can happen. And people put it on film when it feels like it's important, right?
Yes.
And when it's normally... Because it's normally about some sort of power dynamic in a movie, or it's just a realistic depiction of two people that are attracted to each other.
Tell you what, there was one sex scene in this movie where I was like, Jesus... Ooh, which, a bit hot under the collar here.
Which one was that? Was that Farley and Oliver?
No, it was the vampire one.
Oh, yes.
Vampire one. I was genuinely a bit like, whoo.
Yeah.
Okay.
The movie's a bit vampiric in nature anyway. Just this skulking figure creeping about a big manor house.
There was genuinely one point where I did think there was going to be a reveal that they were all vampires.
Oh, really?
Yeah, genuinely, because like it was when he was outside with Anisha and she was like, "We're all cold blooded and all this kind of stuff."
Oh yeah.
And then I was like thinking, and I'd heard something to do with vampires about the movie. Mm. Now I realize we're talking about one specific scene.
Yeah.
But then I started to overthink and I was like, "Oh yeah, the butler's weird. Oh shit, maybe they are all vampires." And then I was very glad that didn't turn out to be the case.
It would have been different. I could have, like,
would have been different.
There's a world where you could get away with it in this movie, I think. Like,
there is.
It is an absurd movie that's quite over the top in regards to a lot of things.
And there was, like, a weird, like Oliver was at that, like, dinner party and he was talking to that woman and he was like, "Oh, how long have you been married?" And she was like, "A long time," but wouldn't specifically say how long. And it seemed to imply that they'd been. And I thought, "Oh, yeah, vampires have been alive for hundreds of years."
You're there going, "Oh," pointing at the screen.
Yeah, so at one point I was like, "Oh, this makes sense."
I have deduced a clue.
Yeah.
Nathan puts on his like his Sherlock hat. I don't know what they call it, like a stalker cap or something.
A deer stalker.
That's it. Called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I don't know. Like, all in all, I just think the movie is like, and maybe this, I disliked it more, I think, after watching Promising Young Woman. I think Emerald Fennell doesn't do very good endings. If you watch Promising Young Woman, even if you disagree about everything I've said, the ending, and I won't spoil it for you, is genuine. I laughed, like, out loud in terms of how kind of contrived it all happens to be.
Mm.
Right? And, like, if you want to, I won't spoil it for anyone listening either, but, like, there are, firstly, it makes one definitive statement that is, and I've read up on it because I was like, am I just wrong? Like, is everyone seeing something that I'm not?
You are famously a big sod.
No! I think this movie is doing worse things than me saying I don't like it. Okay. But there are a lot of women out there that watched it and were like, I was so disappointed in like what this movie had the potential to do versus what it did and like what it ended up saying. And like, there's a takeaway.
Maybe we'll do it on the pod and we'll get a female spectator.
I really would love that, genuinely.
Maybe we can get Catherine or someone on if we do that.
Catherine, if you're listening. I would love to. And you're more than welcome to tell me a new one if I'm reading this all wrong. But no, like endings from Emerald Fennell are like, it's...
Oh, but we can't do it anytime soon. The schedule is literally fill up until next January.
We're busy.
but maybe next year.
And I'll tell you what, Nathan, it is exciting.
It is very exciting.
A little bit of sizzle for you there. I was quite interested in like the writing perspective. Like I think because this is the thing, I think Emerald Fennell is a great director, but I think she'd be much better served as a director with someone else's writing. I think she is really keen to jump into these big themes that I think sometimes gets lost, like these big ideas, but that aren't fleshed out and end up having. I think, and you can disagree in Saltburn, and that's fine. But like at least in Promising Young Woman, I think. She ends up almost going the opposite way of what she's setting out to accomplish. And I wanted to... Hey! Fuck you! And I wanted to, like... I wrote down, because it's her... I was very interested in her background, because the name Emerald Fennell doesn't strike me as council estate.
You get all kinds of names on a council estate.
I mean, that's also... I mean, you get all kinds of names anywhere, but, like, Emerald Fennell... Like, and I know that she... had ties to she was not exactly wanting for much as in growing up.
Did she write this?
She wrote this. This is her second outing. She also wrote and directed Promising Young Woman and this, and she produced both of them as well.
Okay. I've never heard of her.
She's in I'll tell you where you know her from. You'll know her from Midge in Barbie. That's her.
Oh, okay.
And you'll also know her as Camilla Parker Bowles in The Crown.
Young Camilla,
first Camilla, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, for context on why I don't think Emerald Fennell is the best person to write an Eat the Rich story, I just want to read you a very brief early life and education summary of her Wikipedia page.
I literally have it up on my screen right now, but please go ahead.
Fennell was born in Hammersmith in London to jewellery designer Theo Fennell and author Louise Fennell. Her sister, Coco Fennell, is a fashion designer. Fennell's 18th birthday, documented by British high society magazine Tatler, was attended by socialite Poppy Delevingne, Lady Alexandra Gordon Lennox, daughter of Charles Gordon Lennox, 11th Duke of Richmond, and Alice Ruggie Price, a granddaughter of the 7th Ruggie Price Baronet. Just what I will say is, I understand Eat the Rich is becoming a trend. I don't need to hear about it from cunts that went to Oxford. I think your perspective is slightly more biased and less interesting than someone else's.
I'm just reading up on her. Her dad has his own Wikipedia page as well.
Yeah.
Alistair Theodore Fennell is a British jewellery and silverware designer. He is often called the King of Bling for his flamboyant designs and celebrity clientele. Well, there you are. He's from Egypt.
Do you see what I mean about maybe writing material that doesn't make you look like a hypocrite?
I do, yes.
And I understand everyone has a perspective and interesting things to say.
I see the point you're making, okay? Yeah. I do. But I also don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that a person's upbringing has to dictate their entire experience and viewpoints on stuff.
Agreed, okay? Yeah.
Because I do, while I am very much a Eat the Rich kind of person, I do think there can be people who grow up in that sort of lifestyle, can, you know, grow up with certain perspectives and grow to resent it and that kind of stuff. Don't get me wrong, it's few and far between. Okay.
Yeah, most just succumb to the money.
Yeah, most just fucking carry on and whatever. Mm. But I don't necessarily believe that, you know, and this is mainly because, like, myself, like, I lived in a council estate. I've you know, grown up in quite run-down poor areas and stuff, and for a while, you know, I've had people at school, and I went to quite a run-down sort of school, and, you know, people and the teachers and stuff weren't all that, like, great about my perspectives for the future. Yeah. they often put me in a box, and because of that, I kind of grew to resent anyone who, like, says, oh, well, you're going to be this and you're going to be that.
Yeah, you're only defined by what our perspective of you is, kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I don't think anyone should be necessarily put in a box and say, because your upbringing is this and because your life is this, that means you can only ever be this, you know?
Yeah.
Which I don't think is ever the case.
I do agree with you, and I can totally see where you're coming from. And, like, I think it's just, like, from my perspective of it, like, how I took in the film, which we've spoken about. I won't go into it again and again. But, like, how I took in the film and then finding out her upbringing, like, it does... And I'm not, this is not a comment on Emerald Fennell. Like, I've seen interviews with her. By all accounts, she seems like an absolutely lovely person. And, like, and I'm all for different movies getting their day in the sun. And, like, if this does anything, I really hope it's pushed people to see stuff that they didn't expect they'd be watching.
Yeah.
Because I just, that's also just good for variety's sake. Like, it's more interesting when other people get to say different things. But, like, I don't know, having, seeing what I perceived to be the class politics on play in the movie, and then finding out like her 18th birthday was in a magazine for rich people, like, it's
apparently she wrote Killing Eve.
Yeah, I think she was a co-writer and a producer on one of the seasons of Killing Eve, which I've seen all of, and it's a good show. I think the last season kind of shits the bed a little bit, but they wrapped it up quick, I think, because Sandra Oh was getting quite expensive.
She's a movie coming out called Ballerina.
Who? Emerald Fennell?
Yeah.
Oh, what, she's in it, or she wrote and directed it?
Wrote.
Okay.
Wrote. Yeah. Directed by Len Wiseman.
I don't know. I'll end on saying the jury is still out on her as a director for me. Like, I think this movie has some very beautiful visuals. I think she works really well with actors and cinematographers. Like, in this movie, it's very clear that she, like, harbored a good set that people felt comfortable in to do some good work. I also like that she's casting relative unknowns. She's obviously got Jacob Elordi, Rosamund Pike, Richard E. Grant, and Barry Keoghan, but then, like,
They're not that unknown.
No, but then, really, like Archie Madekwe, very new, and Alice Oliver, I think was her name we said earlier, playing Venetia. She's also, like we said, this biggest thing up to date. So, like, yeah, I don't know. I think she's a good director that works well with people, cast and crew. I just think that as a writer, I've been unimpressed thus far. But I hope to see more cool stuff, because it would be cool to really. It's not good to feel bitter about these things. I hate being on the outside of this stuff when I dislike something that most people like. I'm like, let me in. I want to have fun and understand things too.
Sounds like you love it.
No. All right. Yeah. Shall we do some recommendations?
Sure, Lawrence.
Nathan, it is that time that we recommend some lovely stuff. What we do is we tell each other some stuff that we've done. It could be something we've watched, read, listened to, or experienced. Just anything that we've done in the past week that we would love to share with each other and with our lovely listeners. Nathan, what are you recommending?
Lawrence, you always go first. You know.
I know, but it feels unnatural to just go into it after I've just introduced it.
Well, then I'll just throw it back to you every time.
I mean, let's go with that. That's fine. That feels better.
Okay, great.
So after a movie of me absolutely slating class politics, I would like to recommend a hotel massage.
God, okay.
No.
At the country club on the weekend,
yeah, exactly.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I have my robes and my breath mints.
Great.
No, it was my anniversary recently, and I went for a stay in a hotel. And in that stay, there was a package included with a little spa. Now, I've never had a massage ever in my life. And as a man who spends most of his day hunched over a laptop, my shoulders were in dire need of some tender touch. And it was lovely. Mm-hmm. It was very relaxing. There was nice spa music going on.
Was it a couple's massage?
It was, yeah.
Were you like holding hands across the table?
No, we were far apart, and there's a form you fill out in, like, you know, like what kind of pressure are you comfortable with? Just a lot of ticking consent stuff.
Was you like unrobed in front of them? Did you like have to disrobe and get your bare ass onto the table?
No. No, it wasn't a full body situation. No, I was shirtless with my swimming trunks on.
No back sack and crack situation.
No. It was lovely. We ticked in the consent form. It said like, would you like a chatty massage or a quiet? I was like, fucking silent.
Do not say a single word.
Talk, I'll scream.
I am naked and afraid right now.
Yeah,
Don't even look at me.
Close your eyes. But it was a lovely experience, and I felt very. I mean, I had a good night's sleep, and all the damage has been done again. Like, yeah. I just have a bad, terrible back, apparently. But it was very nice, and it was a great little. It was a great half day while it lasted, but very fun. And I'd recommend if anyone else is feeling, you may not even know how pent up and stressed your body may be.
What was the price tag of this?
I
don't think you can fully recommend this without dropping the price tag of your full weekend stay.
So I didn't actually pay for it. This was a gift to my wife from my mother.
From your mother? From Mary?
From Big Mary, yeah.
Mary's got that salt.
I don't like it when people make fun of the middle class, Nathan.
Exactly. <All right? laughs> That's why you fucking related to Barry Keegan.
No, look, I don't know the exact price tag, but I know that it probably wasn't too cheap. But
probably not.
I mean, just also, that's nothing to stop you. If you've got someone that you trust and you're comfortable around, get some oils on Amazon. Have a go at it. It's not bad.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Nathan's scared of being greasy.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. They were like, are you comfortable with like oil in your hair and stuff? I was like, yeah, I'm just going to jump in the shower as soon as I go back to the room. But then it was like all in my chest hair.
Why would you, if you jump in the shower, that to me just seems like you're just undoing all that work they just did on you. Just immediately.
No, because I'm not, I don't get in the shower and then sit there and scrunch up my neck, do I? Like, I just shower like a normal, I can't just lay down for the rest of my life and keep the effects, Nathan.
No, I would.
Maybe that's why you should never get one.
Yeah, this is who I am. Just wheel me around in one of those hospital beds.
Nathan's on the gurney again.
Yeah.
All right, what are you recommending?
Lawrence, nothing as pretentious as you. I am recommending Ted, the TV show.
Oh, yes, you were getting into this, weren't you?
Because, yeah, it's a bloody good time. It recently came out here in the UK. It's been out in the US for about a month or so now, or 2 months or something. But yeah, it recently came out in the UK, so I've been watching it. And you know what? I've been having a bloody good time with it. It's very funny. I think Seth MacFarlane often gets a bit of a bad rap because they're like, oh, Family Guy, 14-year-old boy humor or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, some of it is that, but some of it is genuinely fucking hilarious. Yeah. And I think Ted is a great show with really good performances and just some very... very funny writing. It's just a good show all around, I reckon.
I think also, like, Family Guy was consistent. Like, when Family Guy came out, it was, like, pushing the needle further than comedy had gone in a while. Like, in terms of what it was designed to do. But now it's obviously, people are so used to Family Guy, they've done that revisionist thing where they go, hang on, did this always suck? It's like, no, it's just 20 years later.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just different now.
You're older now.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah. No, but Ted is really good and some really great performances. There's the young guy who plays, like, young Mark, because it's a prequel from the movie.
Young Marky Mark.
Yeah, young Marky Mark. He's really good.
Does he believe that he could have stopped 9/11 if he was there?
Probably not, no. I don't even know if he was alive when it happened, so probably not.
That wouldn't have stopped the real Mark Wahlberg.
It's true, no. but no, it's good. He does a really good performance. He's got, like, this really, just the Boston accents are very funny. I love a Boston accent. It's something about it which is quite fun.
We spoke about this as well. He's perfectly got Mark Wahlberg's very specific Boston accent as well.
Yeah, he really nails it. Really nails the cadence of it.
Yeah, which is very fun.
It's very good.
All right, how many episodes?
There's this scene. It's 10 episodes. I've watched 7 so far. I think I've still got a couple to go. I was watching one yesterday. I was fucking crying laughing. The basic idea was. Ted and fucking Mark, they wanted to get their mum a job at the school, okay, so she could be a teacher. What they did is they went to the principal to talk about it. It's so stupid, but it's so funny. And Ted makes the offer that, like, if they do this, if they hire her as a teacher, he will ask a question at the assembly. But then, like, Mark goes, "No, Ted, don't." He's like, "Shut up! I'm gonna do it. It's for Susan." And then just the whole idea, like, it's the worst thing he could ever possibly do.
I'll really be debasing myself for this.
Yeah. Oh, but it is just done so well. Just the fucking writing and comedy of it.
So does Ted go to school?
He does. Yeah, that's, like, in the first episode. He has to. He doesn't initially, but then they're like, right, you got to go to school now and stuff.
You're a weird entity. We don't know how to class you.
You're a weird magic bear. Yeah. So yeah, I also just love how just everyone just accepts the bear. It's just not a thing that everyone is like, what is this? You know, it's just part of the world, and everyone's like, oh, there's that magic bear that we all know about.
Does it have any narration, like Patrick Stewart narration in it?
It does at some points, and it's Ian McKellen.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, yeah, they do have some Ian McKellen narration.
I wonder
at some
if we'll
point.
Talk about Ian McKellen at all this year.
Oh, okay. Yes, I see.
Nathan isn't.
How exciting.
Nathan's not very excited, if you ask me.
I feel like it's already pretty obvious. It's time to watch.
Shush.
But okay.
All right, so go and have a massage and watch Ted. Maybe do both at the same time.
Do both at the same time. You'll have fun.
You will. All right, with that, thank you very, very much for listening. And thank you to Pierce as well for suggesting Saltburn. Like Nathan said, we were going to watch it anyway.
Thank you, Pierce.
But yeah, if you have enjoyed the show, then please feel free to leave us a little 5-star review. It'd be very much appreciated. You can do that on your podcast platform of choice, especially Apple, because you can write a little message too. That would be appreciated. Next week, we are going to be doing this.
Are we saying there's a chance that when we push that button, we destroy the world? Chances are near zero. Near zero.
What do you want from theory alone?
Zero would be nice.
There's a bomb or whatever. There's a bomb and it's 3 fucking hours.
Get down! Get down! Oh, wait, it's not going off for another 3 hours. We're good. Wahoo, it is not Mario. Nathan, do it.
Do I have to?
Yes, it's a thing we do. We're committed now.
No, I'm not doing anything.
Oh, damn. He's broken the chain. Now I look a fool. We are also on Twitter. You can follow.
Wahoo is not Mario.
Fuck! Okay. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Another Happy Pod. That's where you'll get post reminders for every new episode that go up every single Friday at 10 a.m. It's also a place where you can suggest topics, like this topic was suggested to us, and we also did The Thing a couple of weeks back. You can suggest topics if you follow the link in our pinned tweet. No promises, especially not really for this year.
Yeah, just don't. By all means, please suggest stuff, but And hey, if it's already on the list, we'll add you to it and we'll give you a shout out when it comes.
We'll give you your fair dues. But also, if they're great suggestions, we may make room, but we also may not.
We've made room before.
We have.
It's not unknown.
Nothing is impossible.
But our next free spot is genuinely not until the end of January of next year. So there we go.
Nathan, we have another podcast as well, don't we?
We do, Lawrence. It's called Still Got Legs. It's our Doctor Who rewatch podcast, where every week we watch and discuss an episode of Doctor Who from the rival era onwards. We are just about to finish David Tennant's run. Ooh. Lawrence, we have one more episode left. Well, for now, anyway.
I'm seeing that thumbnail on BBC iPlayer of him regenerating, and I'm not ready to say goodbye to my beautiful boy.
No, I am. I'm fucking sick of him right now. So I'm ready to go. So yeah, we're about to start series 5 in the coming weeks here. It's a good time to get on board and join us if you like. Also, our YouTube channel will finally be, hopefully anyway, will finally be up and revamped within the next week or so. Hoping to launch that on what day would it be? I think it's the 4th of March that's due to be relaunched. So, hey, if you want to listen to this on YouTube for some fucking reason, then you can do that there.
We've both been working tirelessly to get this done for you
guys. No, I have been working tirelessly.
Much to my shame.
Still Got Legs will also be there. And, hey, maybe we'll do some other little videos, which we have done in the past, but then we kind of... stopped.
Yeah, the
so
effort
maybe.
Was very, was. I mean, that was like the first couple of weeks we ever did the podcast, and it was like all of this for 6 views is not much.
Yeah, but maybe we'll get back into it. Maybe we'll do some stuff on there. But hey, check out the YouTube channel, Another Happy Studios. Ooh. So there you go. There'll be a link in the description, Lawrence. Put it in there now whilst you're editing this.
Okay, I'll do it now.
Okay.
I'll leave a beat for Lawrence to go and get that done so he doesn't have to pause on a different tab.
Great.
All right, good job, Lawrence. Nathan, press that theme song. We will see everyone next week.
Bye. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.